Welcome to the Hidden Histories Podcast, a podcast dedicated to exploring the history hidden under our noses. Please join our guide as we discover the forgotten around us.
July 4th, 2019, Sweden. The remains of a man were discovered in a Viking burial boat in Sweden. A man, dog, and a horse were found during a rare discovery of two Viking burial boats in Sweden, announced by archaeologists on July 4th, 2019. These burial boats could be more than 1,400 years old and were discovered in Gamla Uppsala, north of Stockholm, Sweden. These boat graves are a very important discovery to scientists, to archaeologists. Why? Because such boat graves were important members of Viking society. These important members were laid to rest within these graves, and this was probably between 550 to 800 AD, and 800 AD to 1500 AD. As custom, these important individuals were buried alongside jewelry and other riches or gifts, or maybe things they'll need in the afterlife. These two burial boats also revealed to archaeologists a sword, spear, shield, and an ornate comb. These boats are the first in nearly 50 years to be excavated from the Uppsala region, and before this discovery, only 10 other boats had been uncovered in Sweden. Luckily enough, these graves remained well-preserved. What do I mean? Well, there are two reasons. The well-preserved graves were untouched by looters, which means it had been left in its original condition. Not only that, but most graves in Viking society were filled with crematory pots, because it was more common to cremate the dead in that society. The archaeologists will have the opportunity for great insights for research and study of the rare Viking practices now revealed to them through these historical burial boats. And with modern science that has advanced over 50 years since the last discovery, who knows what we will discover? Hello, and welcome to Hidden Histories, a podcast about the history hidden in our towns and cities. I started this podcast to share my love of adventure and history, and I didn't always have this interest, so I suppose using the word love could be inappropriately used here. You see, in school, history was probably one of my worst subjects, and it barely interested me. However, in college, two of my closest friends showed me the adventure of discovering the history around us. History discovered through research and a fun location-based game called geocaching. I don't geocache as much as I want to, but I'm starting to get back into it. And the history that I used to uncover is always on my radar to be uncovered again. I'd like to start the main portion of this I want to say this week's episode. However, as longtime listeners know, it has been some time since my last episode, and my apologies for that. Our newest hidden historian at headquarters here has thrown things more into chaos than I thought they would, and time has not been on my side for the production of podcasts, plus dealing with a family of five now and a new job, which I suppose isn't so new anymore, but it is my day job, so it comes first. So I do apologize, and thank you, longtime listeners, for sticking with your subscription until this release. And please, I know things will be a little chaotic for a while, but stick with me. There will be more content. Well, this release of the information I spoke of in our intro about the Viking burial boats really fascinated me, and I was actually quite excited about it because it was in line with the next country I wanted to look at, which is Sweden. They are one of the highest listeners within the international group, and as I have done the others, I would like to pay them some homage as thanks for their listenership. I took this opportunity to really dive into what I knew about Sweden, which honestly was that they're neutral in every global affair, so to speak, and that was kind of it. That's all I knew about. I didn't even know that the Swedish people were Vikings at some point. What do I mean? To really be able to understand the importance of the area these boats were discovered in, we have to go back quite a ways in history and really understand the difference between what Vikings really were. And in this digging I've done, I've come to discover that Viking is a general modernized term that we throw at actually three different groups of people that is a, let's call it a culture, for lack of a better term, based on one of the groups. What do I mean? Well, there were three main groups of Vikings, and I'm speaking more of geographically and not like culturally. These groups were the Danish, the Norwegian, and the Swedish. Now, before I started doing my research for this episode, when I thought Viking, I thought stereotypical Norwegian, big, burly, muscular, violent Viking, for lack of a better term, who likes to rape and pillage and destroy, and then, you know, I also have the stereotype that the How to Train Your Dragon movies kind of stuck in my head. So, unfortunately, I really did fall into the group believing that the Viking was the description I just gave. That is very far from the case. So, Sweden was really settled long before what we now call the Viking Age, but we speak of the Vikings from this age, the Scandinavians specifically, and we broadly refer to them as Vikings, as if they are one people. The truth of the matter is the historical cultural group that we know today as the Vikings were not a... well, they weren't one people. The various sources of the time from the late 8th century has a large geographically related identity for the Vikings. And these geographically related identities are formed from Danish, Swedish, and Norwegian groups. And let's, I want to make this clear, let's not confuse that with the, let's call it the modern idea of nationality. You know, if you were Swedish, you were a Viking. That's not what I mean. I'm specifically referring to a geographical area. There are many chronicles throughout the European areas that made mention of, you know, the Northmen or the Danes, specifically the Anglo-Saxon chronicles, the Annals of Ulster from Ireland. They make distinctions between the groups, specifically the Danes and the Norwegians. They were really considered Northmen. And in the East, the Swedish were referred to as really a wholly separate group. So the Danes and the Norwegians were considered the Northmen, but the Swedish, the Swedes, were, they're called the Rus. It's spelled R-U-S. And it's these three, Danish, Norwegian, and Swedes, that become the distinct groups that we today consider as Vikings. What's the difference? Well, I could go on and on its own episode on the difference between the Danes, the Norwegians, and Swedes, but I'm going to summarize a bit because I'd like to focus on the Swedish culture. Here's the main difference. The Danes consistently appear throughout history to have been a regional cultural and military power from the 8th century and onward. The Franks admit in what's called the Annals of Fulda that the Danes were the most powerful among what they called the Northmen. As a political power, they had what was the closest thing to a monarchy that any of these three particular regions could have. And they experienced their own version of political turmoil, with rulers resigning or being removed throughout most of the ages. But they had a political strength that most of the Norwegians and Swedes did not have. They had their ambitious plans for territorial conquest, as most people did at the time. And when we look at history and think of when the Vikings invaded areas like Great Britain, the Danes were the group that did the invasion. And they are generally what we consider the stereotypical Viking. We tend to take that stereotype and compare the other groups of Vikings towards it. And there are multiple sagas out there that show the differences between the Norwegian and the Sweden and the Danes. And there are multiple sagas out there written by these groups that explain how their cultures came to be. So, for example, and I apologize now, but I'm going to fall back on my old trope of not being able to pronounce anything. But the Yingling saga is the saga of the Yingling dynasty in Norway. And this saga tells of the events that led to the establishment of the Norway monarchy, but doesn't really explain anything about the substance or structure of their culture, or even the influence they had over their neighboring people. What we do know about the Norwegian Vikings is that the Norwegians were set up to conduct raids even before their Danish cousins were. And they raided areas such as Ireland,
Western France, and possibly, we're not entirely sure, but they had also carried out raids on Lindisfarne. But unfortunately, they didn't have the same influence, or could almost say gravitas, as the Danish Vikings did across Europe. So they weren't held to the same regard as the Danish Vikings. An example of this is the invasion of Brittany in the late 9th century, where Norwegian Vikings took control of the region center of Nantes, and they held it for years until they were expelled, only to find a wrecked city that took no effort whatsoever to colonize the land, and had been done in. The land had been just utterly destroyed by the Danes already. The Normandy Vikings really had nothing to raid because the Danes beat them to it. Maybe if the timetables were switched, maybe we would base our Viking opinion off of the Normandy culture. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon how you look at it, the culture we associate with Viking is mainly the Danes. So with that confusing bit put together, I want to look now at the Swede Vikings. And they were known by a couple of titles, but I'm going to focus on one because the other one is so hard for me to pronounce. I think you wouldn't hear the rest of the podcast because you're busy laughing. Let's look at the Swede Viking. And they were mostly known as the Rus. And they were poised in their little settlements to discover and pillage just like their cousins. They were looking for new lands in the east along the Volga and Dnieper rivers. Their expeditions, however, were much, much different. What do I mean? Different from what? Well, they're different from the practices and overall violence of the Danes and Norwegians from the west. The goal of the Rus was specifically trade, or that's what we think. Unfortunately, history is very clouded. They established trade routes to the Middle East and around the Black Sea, and they actually avoided much more of that type of area until the 9th century, when it's recorded in a Russian primary chronicle, the brothers Ruk, Sinias, and Truvar, Swedish Vikings, were invited by the Slavs to be their ruler. It's unclear in history and to this day why the Slavs would invite somebody in to conquer them. Most historians think this was kind of the last straw for the Slavs, because they've been going through years of raids, and even that is unclear. But what is clear is that in this chronicle, there's an entire passage that speaks of the Rus, describing them quite concisely in their way of functioning with other cultures. And the Rus who didn't move east to join the ruling classes assimilated themselves into the Slavic culture and stopped being what we today consider as Vikings. It's considered throughout history that the Swedes were the most different among the three groups of Vikings. The Rus were, let's take it I'm going to paint a picture for you. I would like to think most of us have seen the movie Braveheart. And I'm specifically thinking in the movie that when the Celts attempt to take back their cultures and lands, they painted themselves with blue war paint, and they looked very extremely barbaric, and they are attempting to scare the enemy. The Rus allegedly cover themselves in blue tattoos, very similar to the looks you would see in Braveheart, which, by the way, are extremely historically inaccurate for that movie, but is neither here nor there. And this is not, you know, a report that was commonly brought up by the Western chroniclers. The methods of burial for their kings were chronicled, and their grooming habits and other details stand out in contrast to the Danes. It's almost as if you would take, and I'm generalizing extremely, but you would take the rough and violent barbaric Viking and then attempt to feed him culture, to create a standard for the ruling class out of them. They were more, I don't want to say civilized because it's a relative term in my opinion, but I'm going to use that for a lack of a better term. The Rus were a more civilized type of Viking. The Rus had very important and what could be shocking religious rituals. And most of these religious rituals were done at a place called Uppsala. And it's hard to say anything for certain, but we just don't have comparable testimonies. These chroniclers, specifically Ibn Fadlan, we just don't have anything that's comparable to what he's mentioned so far. What is Sweden today? Well, Sweden is a country, no longer just considered a geographical area, and it's located on the Scandinavian peninsula in Northern Europe. And I found this quite interesting, and again, I apologize for my lack of being able to pronounce things, but the name Sweden was derived from the Sivir or Suiones, and they're a people mentioned as early as 98 CE by the Roman author Tacitus, who we've mentioned in past episodes. The country's ancient name was Sivioed, but today Stockholm is the capital of Sweden. And it has been so since 1523. Now, Sweden is part of the, well, it takes up the greater part of the Scandinavian peninsula, and it shares this area with Norway. I'd like to cover a little bit of the geographical area because I've never been able to travel there. And so for those of you who have also not been able to travel, I find it, you know, just a little interesting to see what the land looks like. And the land slopes gently from, it's got high mountains along the Norwegian frontier, and they go eastward to the Baltic Sea. And if you look at the world geologically, it is one of the oldest and most stable of Earth's crust. So I can only imagine the fossils that are buried there. The surface of Sweden. The soils haven't been altered since the glaciers ground across them between 2,600,000 to 11,700 years ago. There are lakes that dot the relatively flat landscape, and there are thousands of islands that are covering more than 1,300 miles of the jagged and rocky coastline. Like most of northwestern Europe, Sweden has generally, nice climate, and it's relative to its northern latitude. So it's a relatively southwesterly winds and a warm North Atlantic current keeping things kind of nice. The country itself has a 1,000-year-long continuous history as a sovereign state. What is a sovereign state, for those of us who don't know? It's actually relatively simple. A sovereign state refers to a state that possesses full sovereignty over itself. It governs its own institutions, its own population, and it has a permanent area and territory and government. That's really all a sovereign state is. But it has 1,000 years of that type of history. And that's not to say that Sweden has been all neutral and peaceful. They too have had their tiffs of territorial expanse, and that changed often until 1809. Today, Sweden is a constitutional monarchy, and it has a very well-established parliament democracy, and that dates back to 1917. Swedish society, it's very ethnically and religiously unchanged. It's been the same kind for a very, very long time, until recently with the influx of immigration. And that's creating a little bit of diversity within the country. But historically, Sweden has been very homogeneous. Looking back in history, Sweden is not always the prosperous country that it is. It had to rise up from the ashes of a backwards, poverty-ridden country to what it is now, a highly developed post-industrial society. They have an advanced welfare state with a particular standard of living and a nice life expectancy, and all of these things rank amongst the highest in the world. Now, we all know that Sweden is neutral. There's an American pun, I believe it's American, but there is a pun when, people are neutral, it means they're neutral like Sweden. And that's all I've really ever known about Sweden. So what I discovered is, a long time ago, Sweden disavowed, they gave up, they just said, we're not doing it. Any military aggressiveness that once involved the armies deep in the Europe, centuries of just warfare between dynasties and different groups around the country. It has chosen to play a balancing role. And we all know the world could use a little bit of balance. And this balancing role is not really the balance of a druid, or literally physical balance of an object, or even Thanos' balance of the universe that we saw in the Marvel movies recently. It's a balancing role that's among the world's constant conflicting ideologies and political systems. And for this reason, Swedish statesmen are often sought out to fill major positions within the United Nations to help keep that balance in the world. Sweden itself has been at peace since 1814. How many countries can claim they've been at peace for that long? And they have followed their doctrine and it is in every document on foreign policy since World War II, and it is as quoted, non-alignment in peace, aiming at neutrality in war. Now, I'd like to take us back, now that we've got a little bit of a history and a background of Sweden, and go back to our Viking burial boats. These Viking burial boats were discovered in a place called Galma Uppsala's. Could be considered like an old Sweden. What do I mean by old Sweden? Without intending to offend anyone, we could look at it from the perspective that it is what today is considered the pagan era. And it's considered that because of the way Christianity flooded through the area at the time, things such as the Vikings' beliefs and rituals were all lumped together, creating what we now know today as the Viking, and categorized as pagan, creating just one lump sum of people. But I don't use the term to insult, just more of reference a particular time period. And in this time period, there were sites and religious sites where a temple was dedicated to Thor, Odin, Freyr. And this temple at Galma was gorgeous. The temple itself was adorned with gold chains and is said to be a place where they would perform animal and human sacrifices. At these temples, they had what was considered a sacred grove, and the trees were considered to be divine. So in these trees are where the sacrifices and rituals would take place. And some sacrifices were both animal and man. And they were said to have been hung from the trees, and elaborate ritual songs were sung around them. When Christianity came through, any temple that might have existed at the time was destroyed utterly, and then a church was built over it. So Galma Uppsala eventually became the area where an archbishop was in control in the 12th century. However, remains of its past continue to exist in the landscape. And I'm specifically speaking of what's called today as the Royal Mounds. And today, they endure as a national symbol of Sweden. And they've been a national symbol and a symbol of pride for a very, very long time. What are the Royal Mounds? The Royal Mounds are three massive hills. To the untrained eye, they might look just like a big pile of dirt that you would see at a construction site that has had grass grown over them. These hills measure between 9 and 10 meters. This is 29 to 32 feet high. And these mounds, according to legend and culture, belong to the gods worshipped at the temple of Galma Uppsala, the gods Thor, Odin, and Freyr. However, there are also legends and stories and chronicles that disagree. Others believe that these mounds held the remains of the three Ynglinga kings, who are some of the original rulers of Sweden. They belong to the earliest known Scandinavian dynasty. And this is recorded in the Ynglinga saga, the kings Auðun, Egil, and Eidilus were buried in the royal mounds. Why were they buried in these mounds? Well, it was a practice that was encouraged by Odin himself. According to the Yuengling saga, this burial practice was established by Odin. And I quote, "Thus he," meaning Odin, "established by law that all dead men should be burned, and their belongings laid with them upon the pile, and the ashes be cast into the sea or buried in the earth." The saga goes on and quotes, "For men of consequence, a mound should be raised in their memory." Literally, orders from Odin himself, according to the saga. Now, interestingly enough, by the 19th century, scholars were beginning to doubt some of these old legends. And a future Swedish king, Carl the 15th, when he found out about this, he considered it an insult to the Swedish national pride, and it was to not be tolerated at all. I can't say I blame them. So, rather than punishing these scholars, which was common of the times, this future Swedish king decided to commission excavations, a rather logical and intelligent approach, in my opinion. He wanted to prove that all of the royal mounds at Galma Usapa contained the remains of these ancient kings. So in 1847, the East Mound, which is the largest of the three mounds, was excavated. It then was followed by the excavation of the West Mound in 1874. And interestingly enough, the Middle Mound kind of was investigated, but it was never excavated. They kind of checked it out and said, yep, matches up with the other two. The results of these two major excavations and the one investigation had very profound results. They proved that the mounds were man-made. Not only that, but they contained human burials, though they couldn't be identified, but they were human burial sites. At the base of the East Mound, the excavators discovered burial urns, and they were filled with burnt bones, and they were in a stone cairn. And this pattern of cremation and then reinterment was visible throughout all of the West Mound. So, according to the excavations at the West Mound, they discovered bones and what are considered grave goods, which, looking back at our Vikings and their burial, grave goods are the sword, the shield, most likely the animals as well, because they are considered possessions, and the ornate comb. These were buried with a person who was an adult male, though again, they cannot identify who he was. The East Mound, though, doesn't fit with the descriptions from the saga, and here's why. We found that two individuals were buried there. Neither of them were male. Well, let me take that back. Neither of them were of a kingly status that was obvious, and here's why. One of them was a young boy around the age of 10, maybe up to 14 tops, and a woman. Not the kings that were claimed, but perhaps the boy was. I don't know. And unfortunately, neither does history. In the modern era, we've decided, and I say we as a human culture, have started spreading out our search, not just at the three mounds, but in the area around it, because as we've discovered more and more history, we're learning that there is more and more to be found about these mounds scattered around them. It's been estimated that there have been thousands of burials in the mounds, though many might have been destroyed over the centuries by farming and quarrying and everyday life. Sweden has a fascinating history to it, and I find it quite interesting that that fascinating history of their Viking ancestry is also part of what has led Sweden to be the neutral state that it is now. I loved discovering this history and educating myself better on the cultures of the world. I am definitely watching these archaeologists quite closely in hopes to see what else they discover in this area. Thanks for allowing me to guide you on this small adventure today. Personally, I love having the chance to learn a small bit of history here and there, especially if it's from our own backyards. If you enjoyed this episode of Hidden Histories, please head on over to where you listen to us and give the show a rating and review. It makes the difference in reaching new listeners. Our website is hidden-histories.weebly.com. And if you would like to send an email with comments of hidden histories of your own, please send it to hiddenhistories@outlook.com. Send us a post on Facebook at Hidden History, or now our new Twitter site, which is also at Hidden History 2, the number 2. You can find all of these links in our show notes. You love Hidden Histories but don't have time to type? Try our voice message feature from the Anchor mobile app. The messages are private, but if you would like, they can also be part of a future episode, correcting something that I've pronounced wrong, or a little bit of hidden history of your own that you know about a topic we've talked about. Please join me again as we discover together more hidden histories in our next episode. I'm your guide, Tim Hoshi, and thanks for listening.